Morning, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Two for Tuesday coming up. Get your requests in. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday, Tuesday twofers. So get them in right now, 312-981-7200. You program the music bumps. One artist, two songs, two for Tuesday, 312-981-7200. All right. So this crazy story. Now, Vic, you said you reported on this. This was last spring.
Yes, we did. Yes, we reported on it, WGN Radio here. Yeah.
And there was a follow-up. As they chipped away at the wall inside a tunnel of the Clinton Correctional Facility last spring, David Sweat and Richard Matt had the Hollywood movie The Shawshank Redemption on their minds. The film tells the story of a convicted murderer who spends nearly two decades using a rock hammer to dig a tunnel out of his cell. The parallels were not lost on Sweat and Matt, who were trying to make their own escape. We were laughing and joking about how Andy did it in 20 years, and I think we might be able to do it in 10, Sweat later told investigators. Weeks later, Sweat and Matt were on the lam in one of the nation's most brazen breakouts. They spent three weeks running in upstate New York before Matt was killed and Sweat was wounded and captured. Now, almost a year later, New York's Inspector General has released a scathing report full of new details about Matt and Sweat's plot and the systematic security failures that allowed them to succeed. Okay, now, Vic, it's a 150-page report.
I saw something about it after you started talking about it this morning. I looked into it. Yeah, I see. That's a pretty rough report.
It's
there.
Terrible.
And I'm assuming this is not the only prison where these kind of problems are happening.
That's the unsettling. That's the really unsettling thing about this. Is like the escape occurred in a prison where lapses in basic security functions were longstanding, said the report. These included the failure by officers assigned to the front gate to search employees' bags entering the prison. Night counts of inmates that were conducted negligently or even not at all. So not counting the inmates at night. Inadequate cell searches, so they're not searching bags of people coming in. They're not searching cells. And poor supervision of inmates and employees by security staff and civilian managers in the tailor shop, among others. So the tailor shop, so where they make clothes and stuff for the prisoners? So that were like maybe some of the prisoners' work?
Sure, yeah.
Work detail?
Probably have a civilian supervisor, and then the rest of the employees are probably inmates.
Yeah. So to compile the report, investigators obtained sworn testimony from Sweat, who spent 85 nights cutting an escape path in the system of catwalks and tunnels behind cell walls using tools smuggled in by prison seamstress Joyce Mitchell, who clearly worked in the tailor shop. Matt said he joined him in the tunnels two nights of work before they finally made a break for it on June 5th. Stealing into the tunnels after 11 p.m., after the 11 p.m. guard checks, they left dummies in their beds and notes to prison staff. You left me no choice but to grow old and die here. I had to do something, Matt scrawled on a notepad, according to the report. On a painting he made of fictional mob boss Tony Soprano, he wrote, "Time to go, kid," and the date 6/5/15. So Sweat put up messages in the tunnel meant for the pursuers. One was an image of an extraterrestrial with the note, "Are you trying me, punk?" Boy, these guys, man, the size of church bells, these guys, huh? Good Lord. Notes left behind by David Sweat and Richard Matt when they escaped the Clinton Correctional Facility. On June 5th, 2015, New York State Police correction officers didn't discover they were gone until after 5 a.m. Officer Ronald Blair described the moment when he spotted the two darkened cells, shook the beds, pulled off the sheets to see the dummies instead of prisoners. "I almost threw up," Blair said, according to the report. Sweat told authorities that he and Matt clambered out of the tunnel through a manhole just after midnight. He felt a sense of triumph once again reminded him of that certain movie. "Shawshank ain't got blank on me," he said. That is really unbelievable. That is really unbelievable. This is a true story. So, and then they were on the loose. And finally, you know, one of the guys was killed, one of the guys was wounded, they brought him back in. But then you find out through this investigation that I don't know, man. That just doesn't make me feel safe about prison escapes. Oh, yeah, go on in. Yeah. Bring in all these tools so this guy can dig his way out. Wow. So that's a real prison break. And I thought we could talk about the best and worst prison movies, just prison movies in general, and prison break movies. 312-981-7200. Now, Dan, you would say the granddaddy of them all has got to be Shawshank, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's one that just, you know, will be timeless. You know, that'll be talked about 100 years from now. But
yeah.
I've gained a new appreciation for Escape from Alcatraz.
It's a great movie.
Fantastic movie. Eileen and I went to San Francisco earlier this year.
Right.
And got to visit Alcatraz.
Right.
And they sell all the Alcatraz movies in the bookstore.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. And, like, they've got one on at all times on the, you know, the screens. And so that was on. And I'm like, you know, I don't think I've ever seen this thing all the way through. And sure enough, like 3 weeks later, just by kismet, Showtime started running it for some reason.
Mm.
So I sat down and watched it. And obviously just a great film in many respects and just really well done and really quiet and beautiful in a lot of ways. But, you know, just to see it and how well they did it, you know, because on the tour they did show us, like, here is how he got out, and here's, you know, the tunnel he dig, and they have like a dummy in the actual cell that Clint Eastwood's character was in. And
yep.
So, I mean, like, it was obvious that it was filmed there, and I was obvious that they figured out how these guys did it. So that's another great one that I've appreciated.
You know, it's cool. This is a different topic, but it's really cool to see movies if you've been to the places where they were
right.
shot. There, and that adds a special,
sure.
you know, kind of thing to it. It's funny because, you know, when Once came out and I saw that, I had never been to Dublin before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Dublin and I remember a lot of the locations from seeing the movie. But then I watched Once again when we got back from Ireland and it just had a whole it's a great movie already.
Right.
But it had like a whole I felt completely different. Like I was even more part of it.
Sure.
And it had a much more of profound effect on me when I watched it. And I want to mention this one thing. There is a sculpture off of Grafton Street, actually near Temple Bar, the Temple Bar area. And it's this sculpture of like it looks like kind of a pine tree. There's something else involved. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's a pine tree. And it was broken. Like one of the big leaves was made of, it looked like brass or something along that. But someone had snapped one of the branch things off. And it was broken. And we took some pictures around it. Heather went over and we took a picture around it. And so I'm like, I wonder who broke this thing, you know? And Heather said that because she'd been there before. And she said that somebody broke it since the last time she was there. And the last time she was there before, that was like in 99 or something. So it was a long time in between because we went in 2010. So it was a long time in between. So you know, Once came out in 2009. We went to Ireland in 2010. When we got back and watched the movie, there's a scene that takes place near Temple Bar where they're both talking, and in the background is that sculpture, and it's not broken. So someone broke it
wow.
between the time they shot Once and when we went there.
Yeah.
So it was reasonably a recent breakage
yeah.
of that thing. So. But yeah, no, that's pretty cool though that they sell all the Alcatraz. Do
right.
they sell The Rock as well?
I think that I did see The Rock. Yeah. So and then that was on like 3 days after we left. So I'm like, this is so cool.
Yeah. But you know, like Escape from Alcatraz though really is a great. Don Siegel directed that movie. He directed Dirty Harry. Was the mentor for Clint Eastwood as a director. When Clint Eastwood first started directing movies, his first movie was Play Misty for Me. Don Siegel played a bartender in it. And just because he was like his mentor, he learned how to direct through Don Siegel. And that's one of the best Don Siegel directed movies that Clint is. And Clint is great in it. It's a great movie. So that's a great prison break movie. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Esmeralda, do you think of any prison break movies that you've seen?
You know, I looked it up because I'm like, I wonder if I've seen any that I just don't remember. And one was with Steve McQueen. I've seen The Great Escape.
Oh, yeah. That's a great...
It's well, good, but it's so like, oh, guys.
Here's what's funny. We just mentioned, well, the story that we... The real prison break story that we just told,
mm-hmm.
which is a real news story. They mentioned The Shawshank Redemption. Then Dan goes right to Escape from Alcatraz. And then Esmeralda, you mentioned The Great Escape. According to Ranker, those are the top three already. We've covered the top three prison break movies of all time, according to Ranker. Right in order, we covered them. So, number one on this list is Shawshank Redemption. Number two is Escape from Alcatraz. Number three is The Great Escape. Great Escape is a terrific movie. Now, Vic, have you seen The Great Escape? McQueen?
I have not. When Esmeralda said that, I've already committed. I'm going to watch that.
You should. It's a classic.
Obviously, Dan, his first choice was one of my top ones. And then the other one that first came to my mind, I had to look up the name, but I remembered Tom Selleck was in it. An Innocent Man is a good movie. And it's, I would consider it a prison movie because much of it he's in prison, but there's also part, they set it up, what put him in prison. And it's just, that movie just angers me so much. It's a good movie, though.
Yeah, Innocent Man. God, I haven't seen that movie since it came out.
Yeah, neither have I. It's been a long time. I'm going to have to watch it.
I want to say it was like early 90s.
That's the one where, well, I don't want to ruin it. It's been allowed a long
time. I think it's like early 90s, if I remember correctly. An Innocent Man.
Yeah, that's the one that I'm thinking of. Yeah,
he's got a beard in it, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I think, and not just the stash.
Yeah, right.
So, all right. Yeah, okay, well, there you go. Oh, by the way, my friend Steve Walker did not win the Jeff last night for Best Actor. It went to Julian Parker for The Hairy Ape at Oracle Productions. Did not go to my friend Steve Walker, which is too bad. All right. Hey, it's an honor just to be nominated. All right, we got to take a break. 312-981-7200, this crazy, real prison break story that we just talked about, where these guys were inspired at some point by Shawshank Redemption, are getting us to talk about great prison movies in general, specifically great prison break movies. 312-981-7200. Yeah. Let's go over to the couch. That was my Dean Martin, by the way. Wasn't it, Dan? Didn't it just seem like Dean Martin came back to life?
I thought his ghost entered the studio.
Was in the room. 606 area code requested Dean Martin for Two for Tuesday. The great Dean Martin. You know, to go back and watch the Dean Martin, that's something that I would love to see on a regular basis. To go back and watch the Dean Martin variety shows, when Dean Martin had a TV show. Oh, my God. Fantastic. All right. We are talking about prison break movies and prisons in movies, prison movies. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. This is inspired by an incredibly crazy true story about a couple of guys who broke out of prison last year. And then the subsequent 150-page report about what was happening at the prison that allowed these guys to get out. And it's kind of a stunning, disturbing, and crazy report. So that got us into the topic of prison breaks. Now, I do want to mention that have you guys ever seen – has anybody ever seen Tango and Cash?
It was shown to me as a camp movie of the week one time.
Wait,
I know, right?
At summer camp?
Yeah, at summer camp.
They showed you Tango and Cash?
They did not realize what they were getting into. It was a rainy day, so they put like all 100 kids in the gym, and they turned on a movie, and it was Tango and Cash.
Wait, you never told me this story.
No, it was hilarious.
How old were you? Do you remember?
I was probably 9 or 10.
9 years old, and they put on Tango and Cash?
But old enough that I knew I wanted to stick around after the sun came out.
Oh, man. Did they allow the whole thing?
Yeah, they
ran the whole movie.
They ran the whole movie.
Oh my God.
For us 20 kids who stayed.
Oh my God. For those of you who don't know, Tango and Cash is Sylvester Stallone and Kurt Russell, a hard R-rated action violent movie. Now, do you remember the prison break scene in that movie?
I remember one part of that movie, and it did not involve the two male leads.
Was it Terry Hatcher?
Yep.
Yeah. Terry Hatcher, man, in that movie. Oh, my God. Have you guys, Vic, you ever seen Tango and Cash?
Yeah, I Googled it. The CD or the DVD cover looks familiar, but I can't recall
an absolutely insane, ridiculous movie, which I actually, I back it. I like it.
Really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but I like it. Esmeralda, have you ever seen it?
Someone dressed up like a lady.
Yes.
I mean, I haven't seen, I think I've seen bits and pieces.
Yeah, it's directed by, I just want to mention the guy who directed this movie is a guy named Andrei Konchalovsky. Andrei Konchalovsky is this incredibly brilliant Russian filmmaker who made great films in Russia, came over to America, made some really amazing movies here, signed with the Cannon Studios, Menachem Golan and Golan and Globus. And these guys were notorious in the 80s. Esmeralda, you've seen a lot of their movies because Van Damme was in a lot of them.
Right. I watched that documentary.
Oh, yeah. And that documentary about Cannon. By the way, if you have – you really – wasn't it great, Esmeralda?
Yeah. No, it made me want to watch a bunch of movies.
Oh, absolutely. I wanted to go back and watch all the Breaking movies and the Ninja movies. But he signed a contract with them, started making movies for them. Great movies, you know, American films. He made Runaway Train with John Voight and Eric Roberts and Rebecca De Mornay, which is one of the best movies of the 80s. He made Shy People with Barbara Hershey, Maria's Lovers. He made a series of really beautiful low-budget art films with a very European sensibility to them. His first big Hollywood movie, because Stallone was a fan of Konchalovsky's and loved Runaway Train. So Stallone hired Konchalovsky to do Tango and Cash. So here's this insane spectacle action movie, over the top, big budget ridiculousness. And then Stallone fires Konchalovsky three quarters of the way through and then finishes the film himself, directing it himself. But there's enough of the insane Andrei Konchalovsky sensibility in Tango and Cash and enough greatness with the action sequences, like the prison break scene in Tango and Cash is great. It's really beautifully shot and crazy and over the top and exciting. And that's all Konchalovsky. But the thing about the movie is that there's just such a weird sensibility to it. It's one of the strangest American buddy cop action movies ever made. Just one of the weirdest. One of the just incredibly weirdest. And Konchalovsky's last movie, I got to mention this. Konchalovsky's last movie was his version of Nutcracker. His version of The Nutcracker came out in 2010. It's a musical, but it's not The Nutcracker. It's like a different, they have wacky music in it. It is one of the craziest movies I've ever seen. And that was the movie I went to. The first time I ever went to the Movieco Theater was that movie. I met Dmitry Samarov, who is also obviously a huge fan of Konchalovsky's work. He and I were the only two people in the theater. We went like on a Thursday night at 10 to see this movie. And it's as weird a movie as you'll ever see in your life. It's got Nathan Lane in it. John Turturro plays the Rat King. Nathan Lane, by the way, plays Albert Einstein. I don't even know where to go. Fannings is in it. I think it's a Fanning. Dan, I think it's L. Fanning. I'm not sure. The movie sat on the shelf for a long time. It might be Dakota. But it sat on the shelf for a long time, and then it, as they say in the business, it wasn't released, it escaped, this movie. And if you get a chance to see it, I'm not kidding. It is one of the most surreal, insane, crazy movies you'll ever see.
L. Fanning.
It is L. Fanning, okay. Who else is in it, Dan? Turturro's the Rat, Nathan Lane, L. Fanning. There's a bunch of other people in it.
I got the Amazon hanging on.
Okay.
Really sick.
All right. But if you get a chance, from the director of Tango and Cash.
Shirley Henderson?
Mm-hmm.
Francis de la Tour?
So nobody else then, essentially. But, and to see Turturro in rat makeup singing, that's almost worth the price of admission right there. This is one. He has a pet shark, like an evil pet shark. I don't even know how to describe this movie. I swear to God, I don't even know. Dmitry and I were just like, we thought we had taken acid before we watched this movie, and we didn't. We just kind of sat there and went, I have no idea what planet I'm on right now with this movie. I don't even know where I am. So, All right, we got a break. We'll come back. Anyway, for Prison Breaks, a great Prison Break sequence is in the lovely family summer camp film, Tango and Cash. All right, we got a break for the news coming up.
Confess that I cried from loneliness.
Yeah. Let's go over to the couch. Again, that's my Dean, my Dean Martin. Sounds exactly like him. 606 requested Dean Martin for Two for Tuesday. Yeah. You can get your requests in, Two for Tuesday, one artist, two songs, 312-981-721. You can also call that number to join us in our conversation with texts and talk. We're talking about prison movies. What are the best prison movies and some of the best prison break movies? This is inspired by an actual true prison break that took place last year. And there was an investigation, and the story is ridiculous, and it was inspired by The Shawshank Redemption, which, according to Ranker, is the number one prison break movie of all time. So 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. Here's Ron on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Hello there. I want to bring up the most, shall we say, the granddaddy of all prison break movies. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
The Big House, 1930, MGM with Wallace Beery.
Yeah, Wallace Beery, man. That's a classic. God, I haven't seen that movie.
That is probably the best of all. And the same set there at MGM, next year, 1931, they made Laurel Hardy's first feature film, Pardon Us, with that same set.
In the same set.
At MGM there. It's so funny, though.
Yeah.
They didn't tear it down or nothing, so Laurel Hardy made her first feature movie there with it.
All right, cool. All right, Ron, thanks for the contribution.
You ready?
Take care. The Big House. That's what they call it, man. They call it The Big House. By the way, 563 area code sent in Tango and Cash, said it rules. Dan, traumatized for the rest of his life.
Nope, not traumatized.
No, it was Terry Hatcher that saved you. She's got some hair in that movie. That's an 80s, like 89 maybe that movie came out, I want to say, 89. Hair, some serious hair. If you Google Terry Hatcher, Tango and Cash, doing an image search, enjoy the hair. Esmeralda, you should do a Google image search. Terry Hatcher, Tango and Cash. And
oh.
Then, do you see the hair?
Yeah. What is she doing? She's wearing like a
she's
bra
a strip. She's a stripper.
Oh, she's a stripper. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you gotta have big hair.
Hair. Now, was she Kurt Russell's sister or Stallone's sister? Because wasn't she like one of their sisters, and then the other one was hitting on her, and the guy, whoever sister, went, "Hey, don't hit on my sister. I'll slap you in the mouth."
Based upon that impression, I would say she's Stallone's
Stallone,
sister.
Yeah, because Kurt Russell doesn't talk like that.
By the way, I like that she's wearing sheer or like opaque white sparkly pantyhose.
Yeah, did I mention that
under her bikini bottom.
Did I mention that this was the 80s, this movie?
I know. It's just, you're a stripper. Like, that seems difficult and kind of clumsy if you
well,
have
she
to take off your underwear.
Oddly, she does not get naked in the movie.
I would imagine. Braless?
No, not even.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she's scantily clad. Trust me, I'd remember if she had a nude scene in that movie. She did have a nude scene in Heaven... Heaven face. What, Heaven's, playground or Heaven's something. There's a Heaven in the title. It's a thriller, and she has a nude scene in that. That's the only time I remember. Yeah, Dan, did you know that I dated a girl who looked exactly like Terry Hatcher?
I remember you did mention that, yeah.
Yeah.
That was around Lois and Clark days, right?
Yep, absolutely. She looked exactly like her and had the same hair. She had the Lois and Clark hair and everything. Like, she looked exactly like her. She's the girl from Michigan, Grand Haven. Heaven's Playground, I think it's called.
Heaven's Prisoner.
Heaven's Prisoner, right.
Prisoners.
Prisoners. She does disrobe in that film. It's a terrible movie.
Playing Claudette Rock.
She doesn't seem to get good names for her characters.
No.
I remember the 007. Was it Christmas Jones?
No, that was Denise Richards.
Oh, did she have an awful name?
She was like a... Wasn't she like a... Wasn't Denise Richards like a physicist or something in that movie?
Yeah.
She did. Now, Terry Hatcher did have a... Well, they all have stupid names. It's a Bond movie. They have the women have horrible names in those movies.
Paris Carver.
Paris Carver
was her.
See, it's not the worst.
Do you remember her name? What her name with the on Seinfeld when they thought she had implants? Do you remember her character's name? I do, shockingly. Sidra. Her name was Sidra on Seinfeld, where
how do they make fun of it?
They make fun of her name?
Yeah.
No, they don't make
really?
Fun of her. No.
I don't know. I think
name they're
like
too busy.
That.
They're too busy obsessing over whether her breasts are real or not. That's what the whole episode is about. Do you remember where Elaine trips in the steam room and falls into her boobs? I think you're both mentally ill. Oh, man. Robert says, I totally agree with Esmeralda. The Great Escape is my choice. It means a lot more considering yesterday was D-Day. Indeed, it was. How about Papillon with Steve McQueen? There's another one. Papillon making the list at number 4 with Dustin Hoffman. Yeah. I remember that movie being really long. I haven't seen it in a long time. I liked it, but I just remember... It was one of the first movies, I'm going to say 74, maybe 75 when that movie came out. It was one of the first movies that I saw in the theater where I was like, this is longer than most movies that I see. I just remember being a kid going, being affected by how long, like I couldn't believe that it was still going. You know, like at that point, I'd not seen like Lawrence of Arabia or any of the classic, you know, like Godfather. I don't think I saw The Godfather in the theater upon its initial release in 72. I didn't. 72, I was 7. You know, go see The Godfather. Take a 7-year-old to go see The Godfather. It's over 3 hours long. But I just remember Papillon being really, really long. 630 area code, stir crazy. Oh, my God, stir crazy. Esmeralda, have you seen Stir Crazy?
I have not.
You know what it is?
No.
Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder.
Oh, they did more than the blind.
Oh yeah.
Deaf movie?
Oh yeah.
See, what was it?
They did that's See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
There you go.
Which is a terrible movie. They did.
I like them.
They did. I can't believe they made 4 films together, Esmeralda. 4.
Good for them.
They made Silver Streak, where they're on a train and there's a murder. Jill Clayburgh is in that, and the classic scene in that movie is where. Everybody knows the description of the two guys that they're wanted, and everybody's looking for them. They all know that it's a black guy and a white guy. So they're in Grand Central Station in the bathroom, and Richard Pryor covers Gene Wilder's face in shoe polish and tries to make him act black. So, like, they put the transistor radio up to his head, and he's trying to dance around. And as they're walking to trying to walk past security, Richard Pryor's beside himself about how incredibly embarrassing and awful this is. He's got, like, a really bad 70s hat on to cover his hair. His face is covered in shoe polish. He's got gloves on. He's got a transistor radio, and he's dancing. He's trying to be funky and dance because Richard Pryor's trying to teach him how to have rhythm and how to be black. And... it's as ridiculous as you can possibly imagine, Esmeralda. It's completely ridiculous. So as they're walking out, they have to get past security. Gene Wilder is dancing around like an idiot. Clearly, just in blackface, just a stupid shoe polish all over his face, dancing around. Richard Pryor goes, I hope if we make it past security, I hope we don't see any Muslims. Silver Streak. Not a great movie, but that's a great scene. And then Stir Crazy, Esmeralda, is a classic. They end up getting busted. They think they're bank robbers, so they get thrown in prison. So when they get thrown in jail, that's where they walk. Where it's like, you know, Esmeralda, they mention it in Keanu. They don't mention Stir Crazy specifically, but they mentioned like Richard Pryor, and you know, like most of Keanu is them pretending to be badasses.
Mm-hmm.
That is entirely inspired by the classic scene in Stir Crazy where Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor get arrested and they're walking down the hallway. They're like, yeah, yeah, we bad. And they're trying to act like they're badasses. And that was like the big, you know, that was in all the trailers and all the commercials. Yeah, that's right. We bad, with Richard Pryor doing that. And then Gene Wilder trying to act bad. Then came the See No Evil, Hear No Evil. And then the last one they did together, which is a horrible movie, and Pryor was very, very frail and sick when they made it. It's kind of sad to watch. Is a movie called Another You. So they made four movies together. Only Another You wasn't a success. The other three were big, big hits. Stir Crazy was a monster hit. That came out December 1980. I remember my friends and I went to the Norwich to go see it, and it was sold out. It was a one-night-only sneak preview thing. And we got there like 45 minutes before the movie started, and it was sold out. I mean, that was at the time when Richard Pryor was incredibly popular. So, but yeah, then they end up escaping from prison in Stir Crazy because there just happens to be a prison rodeo happening, and they join the prison rodeo, and Gene Wilder is really, really good at riding a mechanical bull, so they have Gene Wilder riding a real bull. Dan, do you know who, you've seen Stir Crazy?
Long time ago.
Do you know who directed it?
No. Who?
Sidney Poitier.
Oh, wow. It was classy.
It's just a weird movie, man. It's just really, there's funny stuff in it, but then suddenly it becomes like a rodeo prison break movie. I'm like, what's going on here? Craig T. Nelson is in it. Coach. He plays the meanest prison guard. What's the matter? Is Gross Burger farting on you? That's one of his lines in the movie. Ridiculous. It did make this list, though, Stir Crazy. At 22, right above Tango and Cash. There you go. That's about right. All right, we got a break. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about prison movies, prison breaks, and all that cool stuff. Give us a call. All right. 708 area code on 2 for Tuesday. Today would have been Prince's birthday is today? Wow. He would have been 55, I think. He would have been 55. I'm almost positive. So there's some Batman for you, the Batmix.
Also, the governor apparently is declaring today Prince Day in Minnesota.
I was going to say, probably Minnesota, not...
Yeah.
I didn't think Rauner's going to do that.
Nationwide, it should
50.
Be.
58?
He would have been 50.
Okay, so he was 57 when he passed to 58. Prince. Prince's birthday, so we'll get a twofer from Prince. Yeah. On 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A real-life prison break story got us talking about fake prison breaks and Tango and Cash. The most appropriate summer camp movie for children of all time. Dan, did I ever tell you about the story that where Oaken went to summer camp? Scott Oaken?
He of the Hooters Bryan Adams concert.
Yes, that's right. He of the Breaking Three Chairs at the Hooters Bryan Adams concert, Mr. Scott Oaken, told me the story about how he went to summer camp. They were outside in the dark. So you were inside, right? Because it was raining out. So they decided to show you Tango and Cash.
Right.
Show a room full of 9-year-olds Tango and Cash. I still think that's the greatest thing I've ever heard. So Oaken is at my who's my age. Oaken is my age. He's going to be he'll be 51 this year as well. And so he's a kid and he's at summer camp, and all the little kids are there, and it's nighttime, and they decide to show him a movie outside, and they show him Grizzly. Now I don't know if you're aware of the movie Grizzly. But, okay, Grizzly is one of the many, many animals attack movies from the 70s. Because at one point it was like Nature Strikes Back. There were like 90 movies with animals attacking people. And most of this has to do with the success of Jaws. But right around that time, there were like a ton of animals attacking movies to go along with your Doberman movies where a bunch of Dobermans are robbing banks and stuff. These are the kind of movies that I grew up going to see. I go see movies where Doberman pinchers are robbing banks Okay, and these, you know, this movie, these movies made $80 billion, most popular movie of the year, The Doberman Gang. Then you've got The Day of the Animals. Day of the Animals, by the way, is pretty memorable. And now, if you get a chance, if it's ever on cable, Leslie Nielsen wrestles a bear shirtless in it. I'm not joking around. And it wasn't a joke. It's not played for. It's not like Airplane or Naked Gun or anything. It was like a serious, scary movie where Leslie Nielsen tears off his shirt and wrestles a bear. And if I remember correctly, it's better than The Revenant.
I mean, you don't want fabric to obstruct you from really getting down with that bear.
This is what I'm saying. You can't go back. You ever go back and watch anything Leslie Nielsen did? Esmeralda, have you ever gone back and watched like Leslie Nielsen when he was a serious actor? Have you ever tried to do that?
I haven't, no.
It's spectacular. It's spectacular because he was a serious sort of leading man kind of dramatic actor. And then after Airplane, it was all over, man. After Airplane, it's like, forget it. You can't ever do that again. You can't do that after Naked Gun. What are you kidding me? But anyway, Grizzly is this movie. So Oaken's in the middle of a forest. Okay, he's on a camping. He's like camping. He's in a summer camp in the middle of the forest, and they're outside, and they show these kids Grizzly. And Grizzly is a movie about a giant grizzly bear that runs around the forest killing everybody. So here's Oaken. He's like 9. You know, and they're like, oh, here, kids, enjoy this, and then enjoy walking back to your cabin afterwards without peeing yourself. I mean, it's just, what the? Real quick, Leslie Nielsen thing, Esmeralda. If you ever see the movie Nuts, okay, do you know Nuts?
I do. I don't know.
By the way,
Nuts.
Friday is straight out of context. Jot all that stuff down. Okay, you know it then, the movie.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. It's Barbara Streisand is in it, okay? And she plays a woman who commits a murder, a call girl commits a murder. And then the movie is about her doing the pretrial to see if she's sane enough, if she's deemed stable enough to go to actually go to trial. Richard Dreyfuss plays her lawyer in it. James Whitmore plays the judge. Carl Malden's in it. Maureen Stapleton, directed by Martin Ritt. And Leslie Nielsen, she's a call girl, like a high-priced call girl, Barbara Streisand is, which is a real believable. So she's like a high-priced call girl, and the guy that she kills, she's on trial to see if she's sane, is Leslie Nielsen. And they show the scene where Leslie Nielsen is like her John, and he's abusive and crazy. And at one point, he's running around in Speedos, trying to beat the crap out of Barbara Streisand. This movie was out at the same time as Naked Gun. It came out the same year as Naked Gun. And I remember going to the screening, came out after Naked Gun. Nuts did. Naked Gun came out in the summer. Nuts came out in the fall. And I remember going to see it in the screening at the Fine Arts Theater. Mr. Roy Leonard sitting next to me. We're watching the movie. Suddenly it's the flashback scene. Leslie Nielsen is this lunatic John who is threatening Barbara Streisand, chasing her around, trying to beat her up. He's in his Speedos. He's swearing. He's calling her all kinds of names. He's slapping her around. And then she breaks a mirror and stabs him in the neck and kills him. Blood goes flying all over the place. Not a funny scene. The entire theater was in hysterics. The entire theater. At the sight of Frank Drebin running around in Speedos, swearing at Barbara Streisand, and then eventually being murdered by her. It was the funniest scene of any of the Naked Gun movies that didn't exist. You get a chance to see that scene. It's insane. So watch Day of the Animals with shirtless Leslie Nielsen wrestling a bear, and watch Nuts when he's in his Speedos running around trying to kill Barbara Streisand. It's pretty special. All right, we got a break. We'll come back with more prison movies and stuff like that. 312-981-7200. 708 area code on 2 for Tuesday. 2 for Tuesday. In honor of Prince's birthday, I Hate You by Prince. 2 for Tuesday, if you want to get your requests in, it's 312-981-7200. Welcome back. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will join you for the opening bell, less than an hour, and then Steve Cochran at 6 a.m. And it's us, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking about prison break movies and prison breaks and prison movies and stuff like that, inspired by this really insane, true prison break story that happened in the news that we covered a little bit earlier on. So let's get back to your phone calls and your texts and the list of the best prison and prison break movies. Here's Tony on WGN. Hey, Tony.
Yo, Dick, what's up, man?
What's up, man?
Hey, I got two for you.
Okay.
The one, The Man Who Broke a Thousand Chains with Val Kilmer.
Oh, yeah.
And the second one with Leon Isaac Kennedy, Penitentiary.
Penitentiary rules, Tony.
And it is a classic.
Oh my God! I gotta have to put you on hold, Tony. It sounds like Tony's in like a wind tunnel. Penitentiary. That movie was crazy, man. And it was not only is it a great prison movie, Tony. It's also a great boxing movie. But man, Penitentiary 2 was terrible. Oh man! Oh, was that bad? All right, 312-981-720. Thank you, Tony. I'm sorry. I could hardly hear you. 847 area code. I can't remember the name of the movie, but it starred Wesley Snipes and Ving Rhames as prison bog. That's Undisputed. Undisputed is a great movie. Walter Hill directed that movie. Want to know the most memorable part of that movie, Dan?
What's that?
Peter Falk's in it. Okay, he's got a monologue where he drops the F-bomb like 100 times in this monologue, and it's spectacular. We actually, when Peter Falk died and we did our tribute to Peter Falk, we played the monologue with 800 beeps in it just because it had to be heard, even if you couldn't hear like a third of it. But if you Google... It's not safe for work. If you Google Peter Falk, Undisputed monologue, enjoy yourself. That's all I'm going to say. It's one of my favorite monologues of all time, and the fact that it's one of the greatest human beings that ever lived, Peter Falk, one of my favorite actors of all time, delivering it. It's fantastic, and that's a really good movie, Undisputed, a really really good movie, and the great Walter Hill directed that movie. Underrated movie. 224 area code, Green Mile. Now, Dan, are you a fan of the Green Mile, considering that you enjoyed The Shawshank?
You know, it's tough because, obviously, just Shawshank is just so much better for it. But it has its moments.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are parts that I really enjoyed, but just, you know, when you're watching it, it was just like, well, I could just be watching The Shawshank.
I know. Yeah. I feel the same way. I thought The Green Mile was okay. That's a really long movie. Man, oh man, is that a long movie. Esmeralda, have you seen The Green Mile?
I have not.
Yeah.
It's that long, I may never see.
It's really long. Bill says, Stalag 17, excellent movie, great movie. Great movie. And they turned it into a hilarious show called Hogan's Heroes. It was hysterical. Again, I would like to have been in the pitch meeting for that. Yeah, I got this great idea. It's a sitcom that takes place at a Nazi concentration camp. It'll be hilarious. And that show was on for like 7 years, Hogan's Heroes. Hey, it gave us Richard Dawson. That's all I'm saying. You guys won't remember. You guys don't remember Larry Hovis, do you? You guys don't remember.
Fantastic name, though.
Larry Hovis. Larry Larry Hovis was on Hogan's Heroes. And then, I don't know why, but he became like a regular. Well, I do know why, because that's what you do. He became like a regular on game shows. Not to the degree that Richard Dawson, you know, did. Larry Hovis was a regular on a show called The Liars Club. Ever hear of the Liars? Esmeralda, you ever hear of The Liars Club?
No.
All right, this was the setup for the show. It was like three celebrities and a couple of contestants. I can't remember who the host of The Liars Club was. There was a 70s and early 80s version of it, because I think there was a a version of it in the 60s as well, but I watched the 70s and the 80s version of it. Like, one of the first things I ever remember David Letterman on, like, one of the first times I ever remember seeing David Letterman was on this show. This is well before he got a talk show of his own. And I can't remember who the host was, but the idea was that they would bring out an item, like a thing, and you would look at it, you would get to examine it, and then each celebrity tells you what it is, the story behind it, what this thing does, and then you have to vote on which one you think is telling the truth. So it's, you know, like if you get like, I don't know, like a potato slicer or something that looks weird. And, you know, maybe David Letterman says that it's a, you know, I don't know. He makes up something else. But each person has to make up a story, or one person is telling the truth. It's like to tell the truth, except it's with an item that, like a gadget that you don't know what it is. And oddly, this show, I think this, I don't know how long it was on the air, but Larry Hovis was like the regular, like he was like the Richard Dawson from Match Game. Like the go-to guy on Liars Club. That's what he turned out. He went from that to Larry Hovis was on Liars Club. I don't remember much more about it. I just remember that they were the set for the show. It seemed like they were in a Barnaby's. You guys don't even know that reference. a lot of weird stained glass. It looked like they were in some old-timey like pub restaurant. And they'd put the item on a tray and pass it around the table. And then they'd say, oh, this is a potato cutter. And then you'd have to find out whether or not Larry Hovis was telling the truth. That's how I spent my afternoons when I was 11, 12 years old, watching Larry Hovis tell you about a potato cutter. Quality television, The Liars Club. Wish I could remember who the host was. I can't remember who the host was. Maybe Hovis was the host. No, I think Larry Hovis was just one of the smart guy on it. All right. John says he loves Jailhouse Rock. Classic. Classic movie, Jailhouse Rock. 606 confirms that Terry Hatcher was Stallone's sister. And it was Kurt Russell was hitting on her. That's what I thought. Stay away from my sister, Cash. I'm assuming Stallone was Tango. I don't remember who was which. Do you remember, Dan, who was Tango?
Nope.
I'm guessing Stallone probably had top billing, so he'd be Tango.
Yes, Lieutenant Raymond Tango. Kurt Russell was Lieutenant Gabriel Cash. Morning of great names.
The guy's last name was really Tango. It wasn't like a nickname because he danced. His name was Tango. I have to watch that movie now. I have to go back and watch that movie. Trevor from Antioch said, I saw Tango and Cash at a lock-in when I was like, a lock-in? When I was like 12. Did he mean drive-in?
No, like there's events that school holds where they quote-unquote lock the kids in for a night.
Oh!
Spend the night in the gym.
What is this with kids being shown Tango and Cash? How is that a thing?
American classic, Tango and Cash.
I say, how is that acceptable? How was that ever acceptable to have a lock-in with 9-year-olds and 12-year-olds and show them Tango and Cash? How are these schools not closed down? Oh, you know, one of my ex-girlfriends said that she had a lock-in, I guess. I didn't know it was called a lock-in. She went to school in Tennessee, and and they showed in class, they showed License to Drive with the two Coreys. I don't know what kind of learning is that. I mean, that's really, by the way, incredibly misogynistic movie, horribly misogynistic film, with a terrible message. And it's like, yeah, just show them License to Drive with the Coreys. That's the lesson plan.
All right.
We got to take a break here for weather and traffic. Where did you get those shoes? Yeah. Well, I've seen them on the TV. God, I love Steely Dan. Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. Fly Jam Bob. Fly Jam Bob requested some Steely Dan. God bless you, Bob. Pretzel Logic from the great Steely Dan. Ah, boy, that is a polarizing band right there. I can't tell you the number of times I've gotten arguments about Steely Dan. I love Steely Dan, and I know people who hate Steely Dan. Love them. All right. Now, Esmeralda, did you... excuse me. What the hell's going on? I'm eating potato chips. That's the problem. I have to take a sip of water. The Pringles went down the wrong pipe. Hold on.
We should have, like, music, Esmeralda, that we play for when Nick needs to, like, not choke to death.
I was
like
trying to...
old-timey, we were having
technical difficulties. Yeah. I was trying to... I was shoving a couple Pringles into my mouth during the commercial, and I realized I saw the clock ticking down, and I'm going... okay, sorry.
That's what that noise was. I thought, like, a predator had shown up.
I've got cheddar flavored Pringles. Quite snacky. Esmeralda, have you ever been in a lock in and with an inappropriate movie and a bunch of kids in the room with you?
No. No, my parents wouldn't let me do things.
No, but I'm saying school districts are doing it, evidently.
I know. My parents, they'd be like, what? That's insane.
Yeah.
You come home now.
Okay. 847 area code, we're talking about prison movies and prison break movies. Here's another very old one, but a very effective one, disturbing, was Brute Force with the great Burt Lancaster. Well, Burt Lancaster rules. 815. I like the classic prison break movies, but the Guardians of the Galaxy has a badass prison break. It does. Let's see. 815 area code says, what was the Turkish prison break movie where Cousin Eddie from Vacation lost a kidney? That would be Randy Quaid. And, there's only really one Turkish prison movie. There's only one quintessential Turkish prison movie. That's Midnight Express. All you have to do is just say Turkish prison movie, and that's immediately, well, that's Midnight Express, because that's it. That's not a giant subgenre, and if it was, the first one that would still come to mind would be Midnight Express. I remember really being disturbed by that movie. Oh, my God. Have you guys seen Midnight Express?
I haven't. I've heard of it.
But what was the actor's name? Who was the lead in that? He played Billy Hayes. Billy Mays was the guy who sold Quick and Bright, right? Or whatever the hell it was. Billy Hayes, he passed away.
Brad Davis.
Brad Davis, right. So based on a true story, guy trying to smuggle some hashish out of Turkey. And then gets thrown in the most hellish prison that you can possibly imagine. And the entire movie is as bleak and as dark and as twisted. And I want to say I was maybe 12 when I saw it. And that was one of those movies that really, like Taxi Driver, that was one of those movies that really disturbed me. Like, really. It's just a really twisted. Oliver Stone wrote it, so that should tell you something right there. But, yeah. So, yeah, and Cousin Eddie from the Vacation movies loses a kidney in it. That's Randy Quaid. I love it when people just refer to the actors or actresses as something else. Like for instance, when we had the guy talking about he loves Slapshot. Because Chong's dad was in it. Now, who we meant was Strother Martin, star of Cool Hand Luke, which, by the way, is on this list as one of the great prison movies of all time, which was mentioned earlier, Cool Hand Luke. But Strother Martin, this guy's a great character actor, has been in a million movies, a ton of movies, And this guy, I remember, I think it was a listener who was like, yeah, it's got Chong's dad's in it. He plays Tommy Chong's dad in one scene in Up in Smoke. One scene. He's in the movie for a minute and 30 seconds. It is 1 minute and 30 seconds of genius. It's one of the greatest 90 seconds of film in the history of cinema. But he's forever known as Chong's dad, this guy. He's made like 80 movies. Yeah, Chong's dad is in it. Brian says, I'm a sucker for the silliness of Sylvester Stallone in Lock Up and Escape Plan. What did you think of those, Nick? Escape Plan was terrible. Here's the thing about Lock Up. Dan, have you ever seen Lock Up? Did they ever show that one to you when you were a kid?
No, I didn't see that one.
they didn't lock you in the room and show Lock Up?
Would have been appropriate.
But
take note, teachers.
Yeah, if you're getting your syllabus ready, you're for summer school, these are the ones you might want to just show Lock Up to a bunch of 9-year-olds. That'll be real appropriate. Thing about Lock Up is Donald Sutherland plays the evil warden. So right there, it's worth seeing because it's Donald Sutherland playing an evil warden. And, I mean, it's a really stupid movie, but it's got an incredible football scene in it. Like, they play football in the yard. They beat the hell out of each other. It's like a whole bunch of prisoners in the yard playing football. One of the best football scenes ever is in it. That's all I remember about the movie. Sutherland being a mean warden and a great football scene. That's what I remember about Lock Up. Let's see. Nick, Nevada Smith. It's not a prison theme, but an outdoor prison is in it with Suzanne Pleshette. Nevada Smith. That was the inspiration for the name Indiana Jones. Which, by the way, I'm showing tonight at the Movie Co. Theater, but I really don't need to plug it because it's almost sold out. But I would love you to come. If you can, get your tickets now. All right, we got a break. News is next, and then we'll talk more about the prison movies and stuff like that. 312-981-7200. Yeah. Fly Jam Bob requesting... Steely Dan, My Old School, one of my favorite Steely Dan songs of all time, actually. Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're back. We're talking about prison and prison movies and prison movies and prison break movies and stuff like that. Michael sends in a text, and I at one point of clarification about Hogan's Heroes, it was a POW camp, not a concentration camp. That's absolutely true. There's a big difference.
That'd be real depressing.
Big difference. But still... The idea of saying a Nazi POW camp where a wacky sitcom is going to happen, that's still...
Didn't they keep leaving?
Oh, they had all kinds of escape routes and stuff, and they would. They would leave and come back and pretend to be Nazis and... yeah. They had, like, a tunnel system. If I remember correctly, they had, like, a tunnel system that led them out of the camp.
Yeah, it just seems like you would just leave for good.
Yeah. Yeah, they just like messing with Clink.
Right. They're like, this is too fun.
This is too much fun.
Mm-hmm.
847 says, Life with Eddie Murphy. Oh, yeah, that's a good movie. Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence.
Yes.
I like that movie. Harold, The Fugitive. Well, it has a great prison escape scene. It's not a prison movie, but it's got a great prison escape scene in it with the bus.
Mm.
You've seen it, right? The Fugitive?
Yeah, bits and pieces.
Oh, it's a good movie. It's real good. But yeah, that's a really great scene with the crazy bus flying.
Right, he's handcuffed.
And he's handcuffed and running. You know, Harrison Ford runs away from a lot of stuff, including a large boulder that rolls towards him in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You don't say.
Yes. You know, I happen to be hosting a screening of that film this evening.
Really?
Yes, at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont.
Are there still tickets available?
Not many, but yes.
Oh, man, I better get mine.
You should, because seriously, this is might be the first one we've ever sold out, and I'm not kidding. This is a huge group of people for this one tonight. Only $10. Parking is free. Meet at 7 o'clock. Have some drinks and some food at Bogart's on the second floor of the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. Movie starts at 8. I'll introduce it. Afterwards, we'll have a little chat, talk about it. And see it on the big screen, digitally remastered, 35th anniversary of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Tonight, get your tickets now because it's almost sold out. Carmike.com, C-A-R-M-I-K-E, Carmike.com. 219 area code says, don't forget about Death Race. Death Race 2000. That's a good movie to show kids. Now, write that one down, Dan, too, if we want to help out with the syllabus. I'm just really surprised about the inappropriate movies that seem to be shown to children.
Well, I feel like in the 90s it was cool. It was okay.
Yeah, well, you know, these kids in the Grizzly was in the 70s when my friend Scott Oaken experienced. Well, in the 70s, nobody cared about kids anyway.
And then
I'm a child of the 70s. I can say that.
In the 90s, I don't know, because, I mean, this is just my parents. I watched all the violence.
Yeah.
Didn't matter.
Yeah,
didn't matter at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is about people who are maybe a few years older than you and Dan, late 30s maybe, early 40s, that was when the VHS thing really took off. And, like, I don't know, was this the same thing with you guys? Like, could you, like, did your friends, like, get the R-rated horror movies, the Faces of Death movies and stuff, and, like, all gather together and watch them?
I remember that.
Was that a thing?
That was a thing, and I was like, I'm not, nope.
What about you, Dan? Was that a thing when you were?
We, like, rented PG-13, you know, movies about kids in high school.
Right. So you were getting the John Hughes stuff.
Right.
Okay.
You are a rebel.
Yeah. My friends were getting Faces. We were watching Faces of Death and Cannibal Holocaust.
Ugh. I know people that would get it. I was just like, no, I'm leaving now. Goodbye.
Yeah. They were called video nasties in the day.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the term. It was like kids would go to video stores and they would rent these movies that they had no business, nobody should even watch. But because everybody had, you know, VCRs in their house, and parents would be like, yeah, go ahead, go home, go in the basement and watch a movie. Well, let's go get all the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Watch those. I'm 9. It's okay. Let's see. PB, in 1990, I lived in Billings, Montana. I took my ex and her kids to see Ernest Goes to Jail. Here's a very telling end to this text. All the guys loved it. All the girls thought it was stupid. Ernest Goes to Jail, man.
No Ernest Goes to Camp, but it's all right.
It is not. Or Ernest Scared Stupid. How many Ernest movies were there? There had to be like 5, 6 of them,
That's
right?
That's a lot. Do you have a Halloween one?
That's Ernest Scared Stupid, isn't it?
I don't know.
Ernest Scared Stupid.
I didn't really.
Ernest Saves Christmas.
Oh, there you go.
There's another one.
Holiday. Is there a Thanksgiving one?
Ernest Enjoys Turkey.
It's a Hanukkah one. Ernest Spins the Dreidel.
Yeah.
All right, start counting.
Okay, here we go.
Ernest Goes to Camp.
Yeah.
Ernest Saves Christmas. Ernest Goes to Jail. Ernest Scares Stupid. Ernest Rides Again. Ernest Goes to School. Slam Dunk Ernest. Oh, what the heck? Ernest Goes to Africa.
Evidently, in that one, he doesn't go anywhere, Dan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ernest in the Army. And I believe that's the end of...
9?
9 Ernest movies.
Did he pass away before they could make 10?
Well, no, he did pass away young.
Right, but before they could make a 10th?
I don't know.
Seems like a weird number to end on.
But he did do the Beverly Hillbillies. He was Cled. Cled? Jed. Mm. Clampett in the Beverly Hillbillies movie. Jim Varney was actually a very talented guy. He was. And, I mean, he made his money on the Ernest movies.
Yeah.
But he was a very talented guy. Very, very funny guy. Remember we had Dan, that musician, who auditioned for SNL.
Right.
Really talented guy. Great singer, country singer, songwriter guy. Also very, very funny. He did McConaughey when he was here. Did an imitation of McConaughey. I feel like a jerk that I don't remember his name. He was inspired by watching a video of Jim Varney. Not an Ernest movie, but like a stand-up bit where he did like 40 different characters, or a video where he did like 40 different characters. Mm-hmm. And this guy was inspired by Jim Varney. So, I have not seen, I've seen like 4 of the 9, I guess.
All right, well, that's 4 more than I have.
Well, these are movies that I had to see anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like I've seen almost every Tyler Perry movie.
Oh, man.
Oh, I know. Trust me, I know. That's when it's like I go, you know, I'm not getting paid enough to do this. Really. I remember watching the Medea Goes to Jail or whatever it was, just very much like maybe she got a cell next to Ernest.
Oh, there you go. What about that one? How was that?
Which one?
Medea Goes to Jail.
Awful. They're all terrible.
Did she escape?
I don't remember. But yeah, there's a good prison movie for you. But I remember sitting watching that one, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm not going to see any more of these. I can't do it. I just can't. 630 area code, Breakout with Charles Bronson. Here's what I remember about that movie, Breakout with Charlie Bronson. And how, by the way, Charles Bronson, how did that guy ever become like a Hollywood star?
Because he's from the
Great Escape.
No, but he's from
Conan. Cannon.
Yeah, he did a bunch of those.
Oh, he did a whole bunch of those. Yeah, but like what I'm saying is this is the guy. This is not the face of somebody who should be a movie star.
Right, but you know.
So here's what I remember about Breakout with Bronson. One of the first movies that I remember Robert Duvall being in. Okay? Mm. He's the guy that he's breaking out of prison. Like they hire Bronson to get Duvall out of prison. He's wrongly, you know, jailed. He should not be jailed.
Mm-hmm.
So they give him a bunch of money, and they're going to get him out of prison. That's what I remember about the movie. It was from the 70s. It's like 73 this movie came out. And my dad, big Bronson fanatic, huge. And I loved Bronson, too, when I was growing up. But anyway, this is what I remember about it. They, at the end of the movie, they've got Robert Duvall is running, and he's in a prop plane. Bronson is in a prop plane. I don't think he's flying. I think he's in the back seat. There's a guy flying the prop plane. Or maybe he is flying it. Maybe Bronson is flying it.
Okay.
And they're going down like this road, and the authorities are coming after him. They got guns and stuff, and they're trying to shoot Duvall, and he's running his ass off to try and catch up to the plane and get on the plane so Bronson can take off and they can break out as the title of the movie.
Yes.
So as he's trying to get up on the plane, he finally like gets to the wing of the plane. He's jumping up, and there's a guy standing in front of the plane before it takes off with a rifle shooting at Duvall as the plane is coming towards him, prop plane. This is what I remember. The only thing I remember about the movie is the propellers chop this guy to bits, like the guy with the gun.
Of course.
Boom, and it's like he explodes. Body parts go flying everywhere. Ugh. And I went, yeah! I was like 7 or 8 when the movie came out. And this guy gets chopped apart. His body is completely chopped to ribbons by the propeller of this plane. And I thought it was the coolest scene in the history of motion picture. That's what I remember about Breakout. Duvall's in it, and a guy gets chopped up with propellers. And the audience went nuts. I remember in theater, when the guy got chopped up with the prop, the place went ballistic. Like, people screaming, yeah!
Oh, my gosh.
The 70s, man.
Uh-huh.
That's the, you know, that's the highlight of the work week. I'm going to go see a movie where a propeller chops up some dude and Bronson's in it. That's it. You live for that kind of stuff in the 70s.
It's Friday night. What are you going to go do?
I'm going to go see a movie where a guy gets chopped up with a propeller and Bronson's in it.
That's a good weekend.
That's right. That's it, man. 1973, 74, you're done. You can just go home and sleep for the rest of the weekend. That's the highlight. Yeah. 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, 708 area code requesting some damn Rick Springfield. You better
He's
love somebody.
Playing a festival somewhere.
Rick Springfield?
Right. What's the ad?
He rules.
It.
You know, I used to live with Mr. Scott Oaken at the Honeybee Complex.
Mm-hmm.
He broke 3 chairs at a Hooters Brian Adams show.
Yeah.
And I kept late hours, as I always have.
Mm-hmm.
And his room was right next to mine. And so he was sick and tired this one day of me sleeping all day.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into his room and started blasting the best of Rick Springfield to wake me up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you woke up so happy.
I woke up to a lot of Rick Springfield blasting, like shaking the room with Rick Springfield.
Wow.
Yeah. That's one of my Rick Springfield memories, which I have many, as everyone should.
Right.
You ever see Hard to Hold?
No.
The Rick Springfield movie vehicle?
No.
From the 80s?
Sorry.
Come on, hard to hold.
I know.
Rick Spring, you get to see, you get to see his butt.
Oh, boy.
That was a big deal. He was a hunky dude, and the girls loved him in the 80s.
Yeah, he was General Hospital.
Yeah. And he wishes that he had Jesse's girl. You know which movie I have not mentioned in the Prison Break movies? Escape from New York. For God's sake. Snake Plissken. You ever see Escape from New York?
I've only seen parts of Escape from L.A.
Sorry. All right. I love Escape from L.A. It's John Carpenter, so of course I love it. But a lot of people hate that movie.
Yeah, it seemed a bit.
Well, the thing about Escape from L.A., Escape from L.A. came out maybe 15 years after the original.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it when you watch them back to back, which I have, mm-hmm. when you watch them back to back, it's as though time has not changed from 1981.
Oh, good.
Seriously, it just feels like that. You know, the effects are corny. It's pretty much the same movie, like beat for beat. It's kind of the same movie as Escape from New York, mm-hmm. except it's in L.A. And for that reason is one of the reasons I love it, because it was it's like this movie was made. It was like he made it the day after they finished shooting Escape from New York. And Escape from L.A., it ends with the end of the world. Like Snake Plissken ends the world.
He's just tired of it.
No, that's right, because one of the biggest anti-heroes. He ends the world.
Just having to escape from all these places.
He just ends I remember the first time I saw Escape from L.A., I'm like, well, that's it. Snake Plissken just ended the world. Destroyed the world. The world's done. That's it. Because he had a choice to either not press a button or press a button. Mm-hmm. If he pressed the button, everything would stop and that'd be the end of the world. And he chooses to press the button. It's like,
I mean, it's a pretty dire situation. From what I remember, L.A. was not a good place.
No, terrible. I mean, no. And just like New York, in the Escape from New York, they turn Manhattan into a prison. They wall Manhattan.
Mm.
And it becomes a prison. It's a maximum mm-hmm. security prison. They just drop people in and they live in the city and fend for themselves. There's like guards all around, and so they, you know, the plot of Escape from New York.
They escape.
No, Snake Plissken is a master criminal played by Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
Snake Plissken, one of the greatest characters in the history of film. The president's plane is shot down over New York, crashes.
Wait, didn't that happen in L.A.?
Yeah, it's the same movie. I'm telling you, it's the same movie. So they have to go get. No, he doesn't have to get the president in L.A. No, the president is played by Cliff Robertson. He's like hiding under desks. He's a religious fanatic. I can't remember what he has to do, but he has to go in and do something to save the world. But in the movie, in Escape from New York, the president, played by Donald Pleasance, drops in the middle, and they send Snake Plissken in to get the president and bring him out. He's got like 24 hours to do it. And they inject these things into his neck. That if he doesn't make it in time, his neck will explode and he'll die.
Okay, wait a minute. So is it really the same?
Maybe you saw Escape from New York.
Maybe I did, because that's what I remember seeing.
That's Escape from New York.
But I thought it felt newer.
Well,
in the sense that like it was a newer movie,
right? But I mean, you know,
I mean, when did New York come out?
81.
Yeah, like it didn't feel like it was.
Well, you know why? It's because John Carpenter makes timeless masterpieces.
Okay.
That's why.
That's
Escape from New York.
Maybe I did see Escape from New York.
Yeah, you probably did. Nobody sees Escape from L.A.
Wasn't there a lady in it, like that he meets, and she's like part of? She's in the. She helps him try to find the president.
Is that in? Well, there's Adrienne Barbeau is in it, with her large breasts. But he meets a girl in a broken down Chock Full of Nuts coffee shop. And she gets pulled through the bottom of the floorboards by some lunatics, the crazies.
No, like, I mean, he meets some chick who helps him.
Okay, that's Escape from L.A. Now, you're getting both of these movies. I think you've seen parts of both of them.
Because I remember the whole thing. They inject him, and he had to go find the president.
That's Escape from New York. But the lady that he, like, kind of meets and helps, that's Escape from L.A.
So, wait, what happens in L.A.?
Same thing happens in L.A., except he, like, surfs next to Peter Fonda at one point.
No, see, I've seen that because I remember Peter
Fonda. Okay, that's Escape from L.A. What the hell is going on?
So I've seen Escape from L.A. Well, you said it's the same thing, so yeah.
They are pretty much the same.
Then it is LA.
I have a feeling that you've seen parts of Escape from New York. Because there are certain things that you were very specific that happened in Escape from New York, not in Escape from LA.
But there was a president in LA. Did he get injected in LA? I remember the surfing. I remember that clearly.
That's Escape from LA, yes. Yeah. He like does a high five with Peter Fonda.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember because they're like,
Steve Buscemi is in it.
Turned LA into a thing.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi's in it. He plays like a.
Is he one of the dwellers or whatever?
Yeah.
One of the people who live in the.
Yeah. He's one of the dwellers.
Well, so the point of LA is that the president gets.
No, the president does not. I can't remember what happens. There's something that happens, but it's not the president. The president gets grabbed in the first one.
Maybe they're not very good. These Secret Service people aren't good at their job.
456.
What happened? Oh.
Find out on Friday.
Okay. All right. All right. Another Sylvester Stallone victory with Pele and Stallone. Where they can escape from a POW camp. But they decide, they plan this big escape. Michael Caine's in it. Pele's in it.
Wait, the soccer star?
Yeah.
All right.
And they plan this escape during a big soccer match against the Nazis. And they can escape. They decide to go back and win the game. Like they could actually get out, but they decide to go back and win the game.
Modern that.
But Stallone, he's got to go back and win. But there's the one thing I remember about Victor. Victor, I actually like that movie. John Huston directed that movie. It's a good movie. But I remember that there's a guy who had to break his own arm to fake an injury. So they they put his arm between two bed floorboards, and they and I remember like screaming in the theater. But they did. They went back for victory. Oh, here we go. Let's find out what's going on. Steve is here, and the opening bell is coming up in about a couple of minutes. Hi, Steve.
Charles Bronson thing. Can I add maybe a glass of whiskey and a big steak afterwards as well? That's a Friday night.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, that was. I remember that scene when I saw that it was scary to me because you didn't really see that much gore back then, and it was awesome.
Oh yeah, guy blows up by a propeller.
Very nice.
Yes.